A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking with a friend, Toby Leary, from Cape Gunworks and the Civil Rights Coalition, about the latest in Massachusetts. We now know a little bit more about how the campaign to repeal Chapter 135, what it's going to look like, especially on the ballot. And I'm kind of pleased, actually, with the latest developments. We're also going to talk with Toby Leary, by the way, about what happened in the First Circuit this week, where a three-judge panel upheld Massachusetts' ban on so-called assault weapons, using a pretty ridiculous argument, I think, saying that basically they were unable to really examine this case because, you know, First Circuit precedents already upheld Massachusetts' gun ban, even though the way that gun ban was upheld doesn't comport in the slightest with the text, history, and tradition test. I think the panel did have an opening to go ahead and address these claims in the most recent lawsuit on the merits, but they basically declined to do so. Now, before we get to our conversation with Toby Leary, I do need to make a slight correction. Earlier in the week, we talked with Jackie Emsley about this event coming up this weekend in Detroit, Legally Armed in Detroit, where they're going to be training hundreds, if not thousands, of women getting their first steps in and their first shots in, right? I incorrectly identified Jackie as a NRA board member in my introduction. Jackie serves on the Women's Program Committee. She serves on the Nominating Committee, but she is not a NRA board member. So just want to make that correction. Very involved in the NRA, obviously, but not on the NRA board. All right. So with that out of the way, let's get to our conversation with one of the Second Amendment champions of Massachusetts, Mr. Toby Leary. Take a look and a listen. Toby, it's good to see you again. Thanks so much for coming on the program.
Always a pleasure, Cam, and I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've got some new news about the efforts to repeal Chapter 135, right? We now know where you guys are going to be on the ballot in November.
Yeah, it's first in, last out. I don't understand it, but that's okay. These decisions are made way above my head. But we were the first ballot question to be placed on the ballot, and we got the last question number on the ballot. So we're question number 9, but I think it has a great ring to it. No on 9. And I like it. I'm not complaining.
I do too. Yeah. And, you know, maybe they're saving the best for last, right?
That's right. Yeah.
And it is important for people to understand. So, like, even though you're asking, you know, should we repeal Chapter 135? The way that this question is phrased on the ballot is basically, do you want to keep these laws in place? Right.
Right. Yeah. It's really, and a lot of people think that this was done kind of, you know, on purpose to confuse people and all that. I wish it was that nefarious, but it's really not. It's a state law that any repeal question of an existing law has to be worded that way. So in other words, if you're trying to repeal it, it's a no question. You know, if you're trying to keep it, it's a yes. It doesn't make any sense. And maybe there was nefarious intent when they wrote the law, but it wasn't specific to this question. So, you know, there's plenty of things to be mad at. That's not one. But here we are. And so we've had the uphill battle, if you will, or the uphill burden to try to convince people that, yes, to repeal this law, you have to vote no, which I know sounds counterintuitive, but that's the way it is. And but a lot of people are starting to see why it's important to repeal this law that I would say aren't necessarily stakeholders in the 2A fight. They are just people who may or may not someday want to exercise their right. When they are shown how burdensome it really is, they're like, oh yeah, this needs to go. And when they see that there's no criminal side or criminal justice feature of this bill, it's only against regulating the lawful, peaceful citizen, it just doesn't, it fails on every, you know, test. What are we doing here? It's really just making it harder for good people to exercise a right. So,
yeah. And there've been some, you know, pretty high profile incidents this year where prohibited people, either convicted felons, juveniles, have gotten their hands on guns, have used them in the commission of a crime. Right. We had the shooting on Memorial Drive in Cambridge that was stopped by an armed citizen and a Massachusetts state trooper. And then not long after that, I think it was in the north end of Boston. You had a pair of juveniles rob a lemonade stand at gunpoint. You know, this was a kid's lemonade stand, and they whipped out a gun. And I don't think this armed perpetrator could have been more than, you know, 14, 15 years old. And yet he was able to get a hold of a gun illegally. No consequences there. I don't even know if they made an arrest in that case. But meanwhile, as you say, if you want to exercise your right to keep and bear arms, boy, you got to run the gauntlet. I mean, it's going to take months on end. It's going to take hundreds of dollars. Now you've got this, you know, live fire marksmanship test that they want to put in place. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous, Toby.
Yeah. And also the registration requirements are so confusing that, I mean, law enforcement, government, and the civilian population are totally confused about, like, what do I need to do? Do I need to go register every gun I own? Do I need to re-register? Were they registered when I purchased them? You know, there's so much misinformation out there just by the implementation of this registration feature that is leaving people, they don't know what to do. And a lot of people are just saying, forget it, I'm not going to do anything. And I think that would be the natural outcome anyway, because so few people have been even brought on board or notified. And that's one of our biggest arguments of Chapter 135 as a whole, is so few people know about it because of how poorly it was rolled out, how poorly it was voted on, how poorly it was passed, the whole emergency preamble. And I know, you know, ignorance is no excuse for violation of the law, but when no one who is a person involved in this entire process has a clear understanding of how it should be implemented, nor does the government even have the tools to implement it, the whole thing should be thrown out on its face. And the people have a way of doing that on November 3rd, thankfully. And, you know, if not, we'll fight it in the courts. But still, I think that we should just send this onto the ash heap of history where all other bad law has gone. And I would argue that this isn't just bad law, it's unconstitutional law.
Yeah.
In every aspect.
I absolutely agree with you there. No on nine. It does have a good ring to it. It's catchy. So I'm guessing we'll start to see the yard signs and the T-shirts and all that coming up here before long.
Yes. They're at the printing press as we speak. And we even got a little creative with it, because if you think about, no is N-O and then on is O-N. So no over on.
Yeah.
Everything kind of lines up and crosses, and then you've got a big nine off to the side. So no on nine, upward, downward, left and right.
That's
it's
awesome.
Just kind of a, yeah, funny little play on it. But we have some yard signs being printed. We have poker chips coming out right as we speak. We're going to have other merchandise as well. And it's as people start warming up to election season, you'll start to see the yard signs pop. I think deploying them early is not necessarily to our advantage, but you know, really hitting it hard September, October is going to be a really good rollout and ramp up, because people will be back to school and with summer vacation and start to pay attention to politics. And we also just wrote the whole verbiage that's going to be put out in the state issued red book. So there's this book that gets mailed out to all voters, and it's a, you know, from the Secretary of the Commonwealth's office, and it basically gives the pros and the cons for and against of every ballot question. And there's nine on the ballot this year, so ours is in there, and that's one thing we were able to control the language of, thankfully. So the opposition, the opposition wrote all their reasons for wanting the law to remain, and we were able to write all the reasons why it's bad law. So it's a very biased opinion, which is good for us. And of course, the pro side of things, I'm sure it'll say, you know, ghost guns and assault weapons and, you know, red flag laws and all the scary terms that they can conjure up and, you know, how much it makes us safer and the blah, 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 you know, the usual rhetoric. But I think people will see through it once they read what we're writing and how it really affects the, we're using a few phrases from their playbook, like the disenfranchised communities, single mothers, it's a women's right. It's a, you know, and unfortunately there's people in the city that don't have access to a live fire range that are now going to be extra burdened just to exercise their right to keep and bear arms, not to mention like historical reenactors. I mean, think about that. You know, these are the people we want to make sure have an extra burden to license and regulate so that when they go out and do reenactments on Lexington Battle Green, they've checked all the boxes. You know, we're really keeping the community safe. It's the insanity of it all. You know how it goes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, listen, those, you know, gangs of roving historical reenactors, that's a problem all across the country, Toby.
I know. Hey, they go out in their muskets and their tricorn hats and wreak havoc on our streets, right. You know?
That's right. You know, last time we had you on the program, we were talking about, we just learned that the Supreme Court had agreed to take up multiple cases dealing with so-called assault bans. And we talked about what Cape Gunworks is doing in anticipation of the Massachusetts ban being struck down. There was a chance to you know, kind of expedite this process, right? There was a case that the First Circuit had been hearing, Raschia versus Campbell. They released their decision earlier this week. I don't know if you had a chance to read this or not, Toby, but the decision itself, I mean, they're basically saying, you know, we're bound by precedent based on this, you know, previous version of the so-called assault ban that was upheld by the First Circuit. The problem is, though, and you know, I'm actually reading this decision and it's so off base from what the Supreme Court has said. They said that specifically we considered how the predecessor's laws burden on the right of armed self-defense compared with the burden imposed by similar historical weapons regulations and whether the justification for the predecessor law was analogous to the justification for earlier weapon regulations. We can stop right there. I mean, the Supreme Court has said it's not just self-defense, right? The Third Circuit noted this as well. This is, we're talking about arms that are in common use for lawful purposes, including but not limited to self-defense. And yeah. I gotta say, I was really disappointed that the First Circuit panel felt like it was bound by precedent, because I think the Supreme Court has basically told the First Circuit, no, you got your test wrong. And I think that that should have opened the door for the First Circuit panel to say, we don't have to abide by this earlier ruling.
Right. I think this is very similar to what's happened in the Ninth Circuit, where we saw Judge Lawrence Van Dyke write this whole opinion, basically asking the Supreme Court to bench slap his fellow Ninth Circuit judges because they refuse to abide by the Supreme Court test in Heller. And refused to recognize the right to keep and bear arms. They upheld the switchblade ban in California. And he's like, I don't know what else to do here. We have a paint-by-numbers approach as an inferior court to the Supreme Court that shows we need to put anytime the Second Amendment is implicated, the burden shifts to government to prove that there's a historical tradition of firearms regulation that would support this type of ban, and they don't do that. So he's throwing his hands up in the air and saying it's time for the Supreme Court to file these summary reversals on the courts that are in defiance. Massachusetts, the First Circuit being the OG. Unlike the Ninth Circuit, we don't even have a three-judge panel where you could get a pro-2A ruling. And they've seen the Wolford, they've seen Hamani, they've seen Rahimi even, and Bruin and Heller and McDonald. They know what they are obligated to do. And they continue to defy and give the signal to the Supreme Court. Thankfully, the Supreme Court has granted cert, and this is why it was so important for them to do it, because You know, and I'm happy for New Jersey. They've suffered the longest. Their assault weapon ban goes back to 1990. Ours goes back to 1994. But they did. They had a golden opportunity to do the right thing. And they could have held their nose and made the right decision like the D.C. Court of Appeals did. But they didn't. They just said, nope, we're bound by our own precedent. We're not going to look at Wolford. We're not going to look at Hamani. We're not going to look at Heller. We're not going to look at Bruin. And that's insanity. It is insanity. And I hope that the Supreme Court takes Judge Van Dyke's advice very seriously and starts to issue these summary reversals in these courts, because, and the most recent example of that is the Caetano case, where they, on a per curiam decision, had to tell Massachusetts that your outright ban on stun guns is unconstitutional. Fix it. And their way of fixing it was making it a license to carry and a firearm, you know, as ridiculous as that is. But, you know, here we are. We're and that's honestly, if truth be told, that's specifically why Massachusetts sees very little action out of the national groups like the NRA, FPC, GOA. I've spoke to all of them and they're all like, you're in the First Circuit, pal. Good luck, you know.
Yeah.
And it's a waste of time, effort, energy, and resources to just basically come up with a bad precedent. And that's exactly what we're seeing. You know, now there's just the First Circuit has done what it's always done, and that's uphold its interest balancing approach to gun laws in the state of Massachusetts, instead of what the Third Circuit just did with this massive win and the circuit court split. But, you know, I think we got relief on the horizon. It's just going to have to come from the Supreme Court instead of the First Circuit Court of Appeals.
Yeah, I think that relief is underway. And you're right. I mean, this opinion is straight interest balancing. I mean, they talk about mm-hmm. they don't talk about whether or not the guns are in common use. They actually said that they said the justification for the ban was analogous to justifications that have, quote, underpinned a tradition of weapon regulation throughout American history. I thought this was ridiculous. They said, we noted that when a permanent enactment of the ban was being signed in 2004, then Governor Mitt Romney stated that the ban was justified because assault weapons are, quote, instruments of destruction with the sole purpose of hunting down and killing people. Like, they cited Mitt Romney's statement as if it was fact, you know, and I wrote a Bearing Arms that said, you know, if the sole purpose of AR-15s is to do that, we've got tens of millions of Americans who are misusing their rifles because these guns are used a lot more for lawful purposes than they are for, you know, crimes of any kind here.
Right.
They noted, they say the ban, quote, reflected a common concern regarding the state's responsibility to protect the public from the danger caused by weapons that create a particular public safety threat. Well, again, that's not what the Bruin test says. In fact, the Supreme Court has said that particular policy choices are off the table because we're dealing with a constitutional right. So you can't say, hey, listen, we'll all be safer if we could ban handguns, right? Or, we'll all be safer if we could ban AR-15s. You can't do that. Those choices are taken off the table because we have a right to keep and bear arms. And, yeah. You know, I you're so right about the roadblock that is the First Circuit. And, I mean, we saw this with waiting periods. Maine 72-hour waiting period struck down by the district court. First Circuit panel comes out and says, oh no, these are fine because it's just a condition of a commercial sale, right? It has nothing to do with the right to keep and bear arms, because the right to keep and bear arms does not include the right to acquire a firearm, which is, again, just, I mean, it's absurd, but this is the reality
that we're operating
under. And there, you know, there,
I think,
yeah, go ahead.
I think you bring up a great point and shows the ridiculousness of the argument, because if that's the only standard that you can show that, you know, they can be used for nefarious purposes or people can kill with them, well, apply that logic to any other segment of society and you have a major problem on your hands, because 50,000 people a year die in automobile accidents and people have used those for nefarious reasons, then by that logic, you would ban automobiles immediately just to save the lives of the people on the road. And nobody would say that's a good idea. No, they serve a very useful purpose for the majority of Americans to get to and from work and, you know, transport our goods and services across America. But if you're using that as your argument, you've failed the logic test, because like you pointed out, 32 million people own AR-15s in this country and don't use them for nefarious purposes. So, you know, trying to control the masses or say that because a bad guy does something bad with a gun, you, the lawful, peaceful person, can't be trusted with them, is antithetical to the Constitution. Our founders saw that in a total different light, and they did a very good job of locking up the nefarious, you know, murderer or whatever they do that has caused the attention of the courts or the prosecutors. But here in the 21st century, we've lost the ability to reason and logic and say, yeah, why don't we punish the people who do bad things and not worry about the people who use them for lawful, peaceful purposes? And that's the way things should work. And it did for 200 years until the modern gun control era came upon us and threw a monkey wrench into the mix. And, you know, we got to do better at defending the Constitution and making showing the ridiculousness of the argument. And then saying, if you're okay with it here, what other right are you willing to apply this logic to? Because that's where it all comes on apart at the seams.
Yep, absolutely. Toby Leary, as always, my friend, it's so good to talk with you. Thank you for everything you're doing there in Massachusetts. No on nine. We're going to be talking again here in a couple of weeks. You know, folks want more information about how they could get involved in repealing Chapter 135. How do they find the Civil Rights Coalition online?
Yeah, that'd be great if you go there. And there's going to be some big announcements coming out on the Civil Rights Coalition website very soon. So you want to make sure you get used to going to the website. It's thecivilrightscoalition.com. And you can sign up to volunteer, subscribe to our newsletter. You can also donate right there on the website. And we're really excited for what's on the horizon. And I believe we got a really good chance of winning this whole thing with your support. So head over to thecivilrightscoalition.com.
All right, Toby, thanks again for joining me on the program, sir. It's good talking to you today.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, Cam.
My thanks to Toby for being on the program. And yeah, it's not just a disappointing decision from the First Circuit. I mean, they really did, I think, have the ability to say, even though, yes, we discussed this predecessor ban, not long ago, in fact, it was just last year that decision came down. Since then, the Supreme Court has provided more guidance in Wolford and Hamani. And based on that, we think that there are things that that former opinion did not consider that needs consideration. They didn't do so. And I think that this decision is going to end up being an embarrassing relic of judicial activism. When the Supreme Court finally does issue its decision in Viramontes versus Cook County, Grant versus Higgins, and I believe Nagger versus Lamont is the third case dealing with so-called assaultments of the Supreme Court, is going to address next term. Right now, let's turn our attention to today's armed citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with an update, actually, on a story we told you about, I guess it was last month. This is from CWB Chicago. Feds prepare to deport alleged trendy Aragua member after Cook County let him walk for selling rifles to undercover ATF agents. You remember this case now, right? This is the guy who was caught selling guns to an undercover ATF agent. For whatever reason, the U.S. Attorney's Office did not get involved. This case was tried locally, and Jose Vasquez Hernandez was given a sentence that required him to serve zero prison time. He was essentially sentenced to time served, and because of that, he was immediately released. CWB Chicago spoke with a federal law enforcement agent who said, you know, it would have been nice if the state or county would have held them for us. But neither the county nor the state of Illinois gave any federal agency a heads up that Vasquez Hernandez was going to walk free. Even though he was in this country illegally, he had sold guns to undercover agents. The agent said he seems like the sort of person the government would like to have removed from the community. Why make it difficult to remove someone that everyone agrees should not be in our neighborhoods? And the answer is because Governor J.B. Pritzker, Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson, and other Democrats in Illinois have decided that agencies in Illinois should not talk to the federal government, should not cooperate in any way with the federal government, even if it means that a gang member who is selling guns on the street is back on the street. Jose found himself under arrest on Wednesday. Federal agents did find him, arrested him, and as Tim Heckey writes for CWB Chicago, booked him for a complimentary flight back to Venezuela. He is now being deported. Heckey also provided some background in the case, saying it began in the spring of 2025 when an informant working with the ATF started communicating with a man to arrange a gun sale in Chicago. It was part of a wider operation targeting suspected members of Tren de Aragua. Prosecutor said the informant arranged for a gun deal on July 10th of last year. Vasquez Hernandez showed up. He identified himself as the other gun trafficker's associate and told the undercover agents and informant in Spanish, "I'm the other supplier. I'm the guy who gets these things." He then took him to a garage, grabbed a bag, repeated, "I'm the one who gets this." Then pulled out a couple of semi-automatic rifles that he offered to sell for $3,800. Transaction captured on video and audio. Officials also alleged that Vasquez Hernandez talked about selling a synthetic drug, sometimes called a pink cocaine, said that he could supply it, but no drug transaction was completed. He was never charged with any narcotics offenses. I am still confused as to why Vasquez Hernandez was charged only in state court, given that he was talking to federal undercover agents. I don't know if this was some sort of failure on the part of the U.S. Attorney's Office in Chicago. I don't know what happened there. But that seems like that was a problem, that he was only charged with state offenses, delivering a firearm without a license, aggravated unlawful possession of a weapon. He ended up taking a plea deal offered by Cook County prosecutors to one count of unlawful firearm delivery. He got an 18-month prison sentence from Judge Thomas Byrne. But because of the day-to-day sentencing credit and the time that he had already spent in custody, he was released the same day that he took the deal. Anyway, story finally has a happy ending. Jose Vasquez Hernandez on his way back to Venezuela, and hopefully he stays there this time. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story. This is a weird one. This is from WCCB in Charlotte, North Carolina. Police say that a shooting victim was shot during an attempted burglary, not a drive-by, as he told police. This actually comes from Gastonia, North Carolina, not too far away from Charlotte, North Carolina. Back on July the 12th, Cedric Ford and Sanja Stallings claimed that Ford was shot in the chest during a drive-by. But, according to WCCB, detectives linked the couple to a burglary in Gastonia. Crime analysts used gunshot detection sensors to pinpoint to what investigators say is the real incident. And there's actually video taken, you know, from a surveillance camera at the home, showing an individual that authorities say is Ford trying to break into a home. Investigators say that is when an, quote, elderly disabled man shot Ford through a window to stop him from getting in. Ford is now charged with attempted burglary and felony obstruction. The elderly disabled man not facing any charges. And I got to tell you, this is one of those stories where this is my opinion. If we did not have not just an anti-gun bias in the national media, but an anti-armed citizen bias, an anti-defensive gun use bias in the national media, I think the story would be national news. Because you've got video. You've got a victim who is very sympathetic, right? An elderly disabled man. You've got a suspect who allegedly lied to cops and said that he was the victim of a drive-by shooting when, as it turns out, he was shot trying to break into a home. I mean, these are all pretty compelling elements, right? This is not a dog bites man story. This is now more of a man bites dog story. I don't think this has got to be repeated anywhere nationally. I'd be shocked if this makes national headlines. This barely made headlines in Charlotte, to be quite honest. We don't know much about the victim in this case. Don't know if Ford has any previous criminal history. There are still a lot of questions. And this was a pretty brief news report from WCCB in Charlotte. I'm glad they covered the story, because a lot of other news outlets in the city have not. And again, I don't think we'll see this make national news at all outside of, you know, programs like this. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place, at the right time, willing able to do the right thing. A couple of good Samaritans who tried to get a woman out of a burning home. They were unsuccessful in doing so, but their heart was certainly in the right place. And thankfully, Detroit firefighters were able to get this woman out. Scary situation. And it turns out these good Samaritans were just kind of driving by. Dwayne Carr, one of the individuals, he said they were, just driving by. They heard somebody yelling for help. They worked for a Penguin Junk Removal, and they saw the smoke. So they decided to stop, check it out, and that's when they heard the screams. Dwayne Carr and Nicholas Bryant, the two men, he said, Dwayne Carr did, he said, as soon as we got to the door, somebody was screaming they need help. So he, meaning Nicholas Bryant, he's on 911. I immediately ran to the truck. I got a sledgehammer and a crowbar. I ran to the door and I tried to get in. I saw that it was double locked because, you know, it's Detroit. He said, I went immediately to the back door and I saw her daughter running out the back door. So back door is open. Heavy smoke. Dwayne Carr and Nicholas Bryant actually both went into that home. Nicholas Bryant said she's actually laying sideways in front of the front door and she's blocking the front door. So even if you would have gotten through the front, you couldn't really open the door because she's laying right there. He said, we couldn't really see her too much, but I'm asking her, guide me with your voice, guide me with your voice. And she's screaming, it hurts. Please help me. Please help me. And Bryant says, at that point, my lungs couldn't take it. He said, I had a little N95 mask and I fell down. He said, I crawled back out to get some air. He came in, meaning Dwayne Carr. He crawled back out to get some air, and then the firefighters came in right after us. Thankfully, the firefighters were able to get the woman away from the front door and out to the back of the home. She is in the hospital, suffering from severe burns. And, you know, no, Nicholas Bryant, Dwayne Carr were not able to take this woman out of the home. But they still put themselves at risk. They did the right thing. They were at the right place at the right time. And they were willing and able to do the right thing to help the stranger in need. And that's what heroism looks like. Whether they were successful or not, I think is ultimately irrelevant to the actions that they took. And we need more people like Dwayne Carr and Nicholas Bryant, who are willing to help others in need. So glad that the woman was able to get out of the home. I hope that she recovers. But Dwayne Carr, Nick Ryan, still thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. And I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. I'm looking forward to seeing you back here again on Monday with another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. But in the meantime, do be sure to check out BearingArms.com. We're keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. We've got some interesting court filings taking place. Wrote about this yesterday. DOJ asking for an injunction against the U.S. Virgin Islands gun and magazine ban. We've got a new lawsuit filed in Louisiana over just, I think, a a quirk in state law, I think it's fair to say. Under Louisiana's permitless carry law, you can carry at 18. But if you want a carry license, you need to be 21. And the reason why that matters in this particular lawsuit filed by a Firearms Policy Coalition and two individual plaintiffs is that under the Federal Gun-Free School Zones Act, it is technically a federal crime to carry within 1,000 feet of a K-12 elementary or K-12 school unless you have a license issued by the state in which the school zone is located. So now this poses, you know, broader problems when we talk about reciprocity and things of that nature. Because technically, if you know you've got a Florida carry permit, and you're carrying in a state that recognizes the Florida carry permit, technically it doesn't really matter as far as the Federal Gun-Free School Zones Act is concerned. You need to have that permit issued by the state where you are. Even so, reciprocity doesn't kick in, which I do think makes this federal law susceptible to a legal challenge. But fundamentally, in Louisiana, this quirk means that 18, 19, and 20-year-olds can theoretically lawfully carry without a permit, but they could get into some real trouble because they can't get a concealed carry permit that would allow them to carry within 1,000 feet of a school zone. So FPC has filed suit in that state as well, covering that story. New Jersey's potential response to the Third Circuit decision. Again, there's a lot going on. And we're covering it all for you at Bearing Arms, so be sure to check it out. Enjoy the rest of your week. Hope you've got a couple of nice days in store. It is unseasonably cool here in Central Virginia. It's supposed to be 80 degrees today, so I'm headed out to do some yard work this afternoon. I think 80 degrees tomorrow. I'm going to go to a baseball game, and then you know what? I may just actually get a chance to do some shooting on Saturday. The shooting spot in the backyard got bush hogged a couple of days ago. I don't think the grass is too bad. Got some rain, so I'm not worried about any wildfires starting. So I'm hoping to get some range time in this weekend, and I hope that you are able to do so as well. We'll see you back here on Monday. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.